welcome to SciLux, the podcast where we talk about scientific developments and technological changes in Luxembourg. And we are very happy to announce that we are starting the fourth season of the podcast, and with the first very special episode, we'll be talking about mentorship in academia. And of course, we have very special guests to talk about it. But before I tell you who it is, I just wanted to also say that this season, for sure, we will be digging deeper and we will know more. Naturally, we're learning all the time. And there will also be more international episodes, so really look out for it. We will have researchers that cooperate with the researchers based in here in Luxembourg. So a lot to listen to and a lot to discover.
And of course, we are powered by Research Luxembourg.
But now on to our guests. So today in the studio with me, there is Professor Simone Niklu and Professor Andreas Fickers. Professor Simone Niklu is Vice Rector for Research at the University of Luxembourg, where she works on defining the vision and strategy for research activities. Professor Niklu previously worked at LIH in the field of cancer research. And then Professor Andreas Fickers, who is a historian of media, technology and culture at the University of Luxembourg and director of the Luxembourg Center for Contemporary and Digital History, so C2DH for some of you who know it. Professor Fickers, Professor Niklu, thank you very much for coming today.
It's a pleasure.
Great to be here. Thank you.
In case I will not use the professor all the time, because I always get the titles wrong, and I know that you are both very relaxed about it, so it's going to be Simone Andreas. I almost got failed at university, I have to say, for not using the right title. So I prefer this way. Before we move on to mentorship and all the notes that you have here in front of you, because it's a big topic and an important one as well, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about your current research, current work, actually. And I wanted to start with you, Simone. So your title is very important and pretty new, right? It's 8 months that you are the vice rector.
Since March this year.
So what does it really mean to be vice rector for research at the university?
Good question. I'm finding out myself. I mean, first of all, it's a big shift because it means that I'm not doing research myself anymore, but I'm trying to set the framework and the conditions for others to do research. And of course, also strategically helping to define the research areas that the university should focus on.
Okay, so it's a very much like an overarching vision,
yes,
ideas. We said, yeah, vision and strategy.
Yeah.
In 8 months, I guess that's just very beginning, right?
Still learning a lot because, of course, the research fields are very diverse. So we have research in law, in history, in humanities, in biomedicine, in engineering, cybersecurity, and what else. So it's a huge area that has to be covered and that we are developing at the university.
So for sure, I will invite you once again after a couple of years to know exactly where we're going at the university. But before that, thank you for telling us a little bit more about the vision. And you mentioned humanities, so we can move on to Andreas. And I will have to ask you the question, what is C2DH? And I will be actually alluding also to a very funny, personally, video that you made for 5 years of C2DH, where you had a journalist actor interviewing people in the street and they had no clue. For those people who don't know what C2DH is, let's tell them.
Yeah, we came up with that acronym of C2DH really to play with, of course, the two C's in our name, the Luxembourg Center for Contemporary and Digital History. And it looked more like a chemical thing. And so there was something scientific to it. And I liked that. But still, after 7 years of existence, colleagues, even in university administration or the rectorate sometimes have problems in pronouncing it in French or in German or in English. But nevertheless, I like it better than the original suggestion that we should tell ourselves the Institute for Contemporary History simply. So, yeah, we do the combination of history and digital methods. And so that's why we put it also into the name of the center to make clear that, yes, we focus on contemporary history, but our mission is really to explore the challenges of doing our profession with the new digital research infrastructures, with big data of the past, and to explore new methods of looking at the past with those tools.
So we have two different kind of more practitioner and a previous practitioner here. But also before we started the recording, you both had a question to me. Shouldn't we say why we are here, actually? Why the two of us are talking about mentorship? So as I said, the academia has spoken. So in case of Andreas, he's here because he got an FNR award. I think it was the first year that FNR was giving the award for the outstanding mentorship. Here in the academic field. And Professor Niklu, it's mainly because you are behind the advanced program, so the mentorship program at the university, aren't you?
Yes, that's correct. So that's a program that was launched by our gender office, and it's currently dedicated to supporting women or mentoring women in the university. But we have additionally another program that is also focusing on mentoring academic leadership. And so these are very important topics for me, and I think we will aim to offer this to the whole community at the university.
Okay, important topics. So of course, you are two researchers at heart, and you know my podcast also is like that. We start with the basics, so we start with definitions. Not easy, I guess, but what is mentorship for you, Simona, actually?
For me, it's something, I guess, that comes naturally. It's really accompanying people in their life, in their career development, but also taking into account their whole personality.
How can you know the personality when you start mentoring someone?
Well, of course you don't know, but you learn to know the people you work with, and each and everyone is different. So you have to adapt also your working relationship to the person that you're working with. And this is particularly true for PhD students, for example, but also for colleagues or for young scientists that grow into taking over leadership roles, etc.
Would you add something to it, Andreas?
Yeah, I think it's important. Simona already alluded to that, that it's not just a thing for academic staff, I would say, although we focus very much on, of course, mentoring of PhD students. But for me at C2DH, mentoring means having that attitude of, yeah, career development, of taking care of the personality of the people around. Includes our admin staff, technical staff. So it's more of a general coaching and mentoring culture that we aim to establish, not just for the scientific staff.
You just mentioned the keyword coaching. So is it similar to coaching or different?
It is similar, but it goes further, I would say. Coaching, or when we speak about PhD students, supervising PhD students or postdoctoral students, is a more, I would say, goal-oriented activity where you want them after 4 years, for example, to finish the PhD successfully or to finish a research project. So, and it's very much about your expertise that you can give as an expert in your field to help realizing that goal. Whereas for me, mentoring means a lot more. It's really having a sensitivity for, yeah, the personality you're collaborating with, for the also daily kind of issues that come up along trajectory, be it a four-year PhD trajectory, and for finding a role for that person to develop. So it's very much about thinking, how can you, in that role that you have, grow? How can I, as a mentor, empower those people for the best of both the person that is working with us and for the environment, so our center in that sense.
Is it also actually advising against academia in some way, Simona, do you think? Because what Andreas said is, you know, mentoring is kind of career development. And you sometimes just see, well, most probably this person is just not right for academia.
Well, absolutely. I think mentoring is really about finding what is right for the person. And that can be within academia, outside academia, career development in any areas. I mean, I have been mentoring also PhD students, helping them to stop their PhD and then, you know, realize this is not for them, but then help them to move to the next step.
That must be very difficult.
That's not the easiest, that's true. But I think if that's done in a very good supportive way and with awareness and with really respect towards the other person, I think at the end, everyone is grateful for it. For example, a PhD or an academic career is really not interesting for everybody and is not made for everyone.
Why do they start then? What's the problem here? Is there a kind of a misconception of what the PhD path is or later on? Or Andreas, what do you think?
Yeah, that's a good point because I think mentoring already starts at the interview level when you speak for the first time with people about their expectations. And I think expectation management is a huge part of the job of a mentor or a coach. And it's really important already to get a feeling for that when you have a first encounter with a potential PhD student. That's why I think preparing job interviews is really crucial. And you need to ask questions that also allow you to dig a little bit deeper, maybe into the personality side of someone and not just to the look at the kind of standard qualifications that everybody has to bring.
Well, that's a very good point, I think. And also, it kind of asks the question of how early we should start I'm not a mentor in academia, but mentors in academia, how early should they start, right? So you're saying at the interview level, would you agree with that, Simone?
Yeah, I think mentoring can start at any time. And for any person that is can be at a different time point. Of course, if you're recruiting PhD students, that's a very important time point. But other colleagues, it may be, just because you happen to bump into someone who is at a particular stage in his or her career, and you see that there is a question or a need for support.
For me, mentoring, I would say, started when I was a master's student. And it just made me realize, okay, I thought I would be studying for PhD. No, it's not my world, right? So it's also that I think we really should think at the very beginning to make the message clear what it means, how it is, show the world, show the different perspectives and also the people you'll be working with and how the path goes on. Of course, it depends on the university and depends on people. But in general, there are certain qualities that we can define as such. And I think I'm very grateful that they made me realize that academia is not for me, but now I'm coming back and I'm coming back more and more and I feel better here all the time. So I don't know whether this is again the world telling me something or not.
But it can also work the other way around. I had at least two cases where I really saw a talent in a master student, and those people had no plan to do a PhD. They wanted to quit academia to get into the job as soon as possible. And I was really trying to empower them and to say, hey, I see a talent. And wouldn't you have the courage maybe to take that other route? So sometimes it also is about really, trying to discover some hidden talents. And very often these are very shy students that don't want to put themselves forward. Here, I think it's also our role to see those hidden qualities or talents and then maybe try to make them shine.
Yeah, that's actually, I think, a very important aspect, particularly when it comes to women, because women are very often not bold enough to step forward. And I think there the mentoring is extremely important to give confidence and to have, someone that they see. People are believing in you and you can move forward and take the next step.
And it's great you mentioned that because that was also my question. So is there a difference in mentoring women and men except for that, something else? Andreas, do you feel that you need to give a bit more feedback, positive feedback to women if you're mentoring them?
I don't know. I don't think so, that I at least consciously make a difference between mentoring or coaching a female or a male student or postdoc. But of course, the questions or the problems or the challenges might be more gender specific, and you have to adapt to that very much. But it's not, I think, by definition, a different style. But one has to be also, as a male supervisor, maybe to learn to be more sensitive about some issues that are not so let's say, immediately understandable to me as a man. So it's a learning process, and that's what I really like about mentoring. It is a relationship between two people, and it's sometimes also very close relationship. And here one has to negotiate, of course, the necessary distance between being an academic supervisor on the one side and a mentor on the other. But it's something that grows. It's a long trajectory, 4 years in the case of a PhD student. And you get to know each other better during that time. And so you learn from both sides, I would say.
So what do you think, Simone? Is it beneficial to have a mentor from the same gender or not?
I don't think that's necessary. I think it doesn't make a difference. I mean, as Andrea says, it's the topics may be different, but I think otherwise it's not an issue.
I guess, again, it also depends on the person and case-by-case situations, right? But what Andrea said made me think it's just all about listening. I mean, I'm sorry, sometimes it's such a cliche, we should listen to each other, but it's just so crucial. It's the same for me when I'm doing the interviews. It's just like I listen, and then somehow things happen, and I just, you know, put myself in the shoes of the other, right? It's mentoring as well, in this case, I guess.
Yeah, it's a lot about listening and observing and feeling how someone is developing, is moving on. Absolutely, yeah.
But that's, I mean, completely right. The difference between hearing and listening. You might hear problems or noises about issues and so on, but you need time for listening. And that's, I think, crucial in the coaching and mentoring, that you make space for that situations where you can listen. And we all have, I think, both a very hectic and fully packed agenda as vice rector of research or director of a center. And one really has to fight for making those spaces free for giving time for listening. Very often that is then put aside because there are other more urgent, more important things, apparently. And one really has to be careful not to lose that moments of listening.
So do you have something set up, Andreas? Like, I don't know, Thursdays in the morning is the time when I listen?
Not in that way, but with all of my PhDs and postdocs and even with my members of the management team, we have regular one-to-one meetings. And with my PhD students, it's 1 hour a month. And I have now 8 or 9. So that is already taking a lot of time then with the postdocs, but this is not negotiable for me. So they take a lot of spots in my agenda, but it's also the time that I enjoy the most of my work, I must say, because of course you learn as much as they learn during that process.
That's great. We will definitely discuss this kind of a relationship, who is learning there, because I think it's a kind of a two-way street. But before, what about you, Simone? I guess now that you changed positions, you have even less time. So if someone comes to you, can you be my mentor? What do you do?
Well, I mean, normally it doesn't happen like that.
Why not?
At least for me, until now, I never did this in a formalized way. I think it was just something that was part of my job, as of course as a PhD supervisor, but also as a director of department, where I was dealing with a lot of group leaders and younger scientists that moved towards group leadership. So I don't know. It just happened on the way. Now, clearly, for the moment, I don't have time for PhD student supervision on mentoring. I finished my last PhD student last week, and I'm very glad it went very successfully. But I think PhD students really need dedicated time, and that I don't have at the moment. But of course, it's not just about PhD students. It's also about the colleagues, about every other person you are dealing with.
Now let's move on to rewards, because that's also part of the thing. Do you think that good mentors are rewarded in academia or not?
Well, I have an issue with that, in the sense that, first of all, no, they are not rewarded. But on the other hand, I think reward is against the spirit of mentorship. Because mentorship in itself is really, you're giving something without wanting something back. So it's really something very hands-off. So it's a bit difficult for me to see how this should be rewarded. Of course, I think if it's unexpected, like the award that Andreas received by the FNR, I think that's a wonderful reward because it's coming from the outside. But otherwise, you know, it's not something that you should get points for. Also, the mentee, you should not expect anything from the mentee. It's really something you try to provide and that's it.
I would fully agree. I mean, it's not rewarded in the sense that you can measure it or have it on your CV and that it would facilitate your career as a professor. So that's certainly not the case. The system still is based on counting measurable outputs like publications or other stuff, but not taking care of the time you, for example, invest in mentoring. That's clearly not rewarded, but I subscribe fully to what Simone was saying, that for me the reward is if the student or whoever is growing, is empowered, and you can see people develop into becoming a good scientist or becoming a responsible manager or PI, and that is the biggest reward, when you can see that really the people are filling their roles, are happy in what they do, and if they are happy, they're doing most of the time a good job, and this is for the profit of all.
What I can see that for both of you, it seems that it's a kind of an inner motivation, right? So you just take it as a role for you, it's natural. So what do you think? Should we be formalizing this then? Are those programs important or should it be happening just naturally? Let it be, Simone.
I mean, ideally it happens naturally, but that's of course not always the case. And so I think then it becomes very helpful to formalize it. Especially, as I said before, I think for women, it's very important to formalize it in a certain sense because people don't necessarily know what support structures are available for them. So if you put this in a more formal way, then people are also more open to accept that and to benefit from it. So I think that's definitely very helpful, but it doesn't necessarily need to be formalized in all cases.
I would agree, formalize, but maybe I would strengthen the importance or necessity of talking about it and making clear that mentoring should be a natural part of the job we do. And it's not talked about a lot. So creating that awareness and also maybe sharing good practices is something that I would definitely see as an important role of also the university leadership, especially seeing the great diversity of people we have at the University of Luxembourg coming from so different research cultures where mentorship or supervision can mean something completely different. So I think it would be good to discuss among us, and we have started doing so, what does mentorship mean at the University of Luxembourg, and how can we make also a statement saying this is in part of our research culture. And FNR is working towards also that kind of charter where I've been involved in discussing that. I think it would be really good to make that visible and explicit.
Yeah, I think it's part of our job. I mean, if you are a professor or a PI in a research group, I mean, that's part of your job because you are dealing with people, often younger people, that you are teaching the science part, so, and that's or the education, the part, and that's the more technical aspect or the knowledge you transfer. But then there is also the human aspect and the development of the person, and that's, in a way, it's part of your job. It's like when you have kids, when you're a parent, you have kids, you do it naturally.
Or not.
And of course, we all know that there are differences in parents and differences in professors. And so for some, it's easier. And for others, maybe it would help to become more aware of it and to get also coached first to be able to be a good
exactly mentor. I think that, I mean, everybody who is getting to a professorship becomes professor not for being qualified as a mentor or for being qualified, for example, as a teacher. I mean, you have professors who have never had a single instruction in pedagogical principles or in how to speak in front of a group of students. And I think this should be changed. We should put more emphasis on things like, preparing people for becoming a good teacher, and also for offering them training, what it means to be, for example, a PI, a principal investigator, and to manage people, because we are also not trained to manage people.
Yes, I think I would definitely agree. And I have a feeling that we're going into a lot of different ideas here that we can discuss in another episode, because that's a very deep kind of a look into what we should be discussing in being a professor, being a researcher, academia, as you mentioned, both research and teaching and the balance. And then we can also talk about outreach, science communication. Should it be more developed? That's my interest, obviously. So of course it should. But staying in the subject a little bit more, so in mentorship, what I understood is that in your case, whenever you were a mentor, the mentees were in the same field. Has it ever happened that you were mentoring someone, I don't know, Simone, for you, some historian or someone that is actually a specialist in a completely different field? And do you think it's good or bad, of course?
I have indeed most experience in my own field, which is easier because you know what are the possibilities or the requirements also of a career path. Maybe with my nephews, I have some experience mentoring in other fields. And I think that works very well as well. It's just that since you don't know the field so well, you don't know all the details. But I think on a human level, it can still work.
And you, Andreas, experience with nephews?
To a certain degree, yeah. But I think within C2DH, I mentioned that earlier, we try to establish that coaching culture that goes beyond the academic staff. So I'm trying also to mentor people that are coming from a computer science background or are working as developers or coders with us or as web designers. So I think there is no necessity to stay within your field, because that's the difference between supervision, where it's on your expertise, disciplinary expertise, and mentoring, where it's about values and it's process driven. So I think everybody who has a certain sensitivity for these issues can be a mentor of somebody from a completely different field.
Okay, so we leave the definitions. That was a long defining moment, like almost 20 minutes of discussing what mentorship is. And before we move on to being a mentor, I just wanted to ask you, what about being a mentee? Do you have experience, Andreas? Have you been a mentee first?
Well, I look back at my own career, I was lucky to have had one or two people that really had that role in my life without, I think, me being aware of the term mentee or mentor at the time. But I was lucky to have had two persons that really shaped my career, shaped my academic or professional development. So where this kind of personal relationship became very important. And even more so as I had also negative experiences as a PhD student. I had a professor where I started off with my PhD research that at one point when I wanted to change the institute said, okay, you have to keep that topic here. You have to start by zero. This is my topic. So I had to really huge fights at a very critical point of my PhD trajectory. So that what helped me to overcome those troubles. And you are in, of course, a power relation between a PhD student and a professor where you have little say. I had another person that really helped me a lot in overcoming that difficult situation and in giving me the kind of trust that was necessary to deal with such difficult situation, both in academia but also outside. I worked in the Deutsches Museum in Munich for 2 years at the end of my master's study, and there I had the great opportunity of becoming part of a team creating a new museum, and that project leader became really a kind of mentor for me, giving me the opportunity of getting out of my comfort zone, being part of a team doing fantastic research and project management to develop a museum. And he also was the one who then said, well, now you have to do your PhD. Because if you want to do a career in German museum landscape, you need a PhD. I never planned to. So it was really that person that encouraged me to go further. And that's how I ended up staying in academia, which was never my plan. I was planning to go back to the museum after finishing my PhD.
So you have the parallel now with what you mentioned with those master students that you fish out and see like, oh,
exactly.
I see someone here that I recognize very well. What about you, Simone? What's the story for you as a mentee?
I think in a way, every teacher or many of my teachers from very young on have always played a little bit of a mentorship role, not formally in any way, but I really relied a lot on the input from teachers and also from experiences working in different environments. But I think a real mentor I had once I had done my PhD, my postdoc, and I started my own research group. So becoming an independent researcher. And there I really had a fantastic mentor who was supporting me very hands-off, but with very crucial things. And it was a professor from Norway who had a lot of experience, who had a huge network of colleagues. And by making connections for me and bringing me into the community, that was a very important mentorship aspect.
Okay, so I can see that also then you kind of try to replicate that later on, right? The hands-off approach that you're talking about a lot, right? Okay, so now you as a mentor, we move on to analyzing yourself. I feel a bit like a psychoanalyst right now because I'm asking you for give me all the best qualities you have. But for sure, I mean, it's an important question and it's interesting to know your perspective as well. Simone, how do you see yourself as a mentor? You're the hands-off one as well or not really? What are your qualities?
Ooh. Yeah, difficult. I think I am hands-off, but I also see when the hands are needed and then I probably get into it. Yeah, as I said before, I think it's important not to expect anything in return. So being generous and enjoying seeing development of people. And that can be very various different things. But clearly I have a fable for mentoring women, but not only. I mean, I've been mentoring several also male scientists. But I find it difficult to say what...
Yeah, I know. I made it difficult because it's exactly that question we all hate, right? It's like, what are you? You know, the professional question should be, what are the most important qualities that a mentor should have? And I take you out of the equation, right? Okay, so let's go for that. And we are not talking about yourself, obviously, not at all. What are the qualities, Simone, then? Just general,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, I mean... First of all, you need to be open to different people, different life. You need to be impartial, so trying not to judge, but rather observe and try to understand. Listen, as we said before, and trying to understand what is behind the person. Where are the strengths, the weaknesses, and where that person wants to go or could go, and how could you help that person to get there?
Okay, sounds good. I think now, to be fair, I should first ask Andreas, so what kind of a mentor are you? Because I put Simone in the spotlight, so it will not be fair that she was the only one answering it. So I want to see you, blush or whatever. The listeners can see that.
Well, what you should ask our mentees.
There you go.
Take the microphone to the streets and then have some voices. But... Well, I think my biggest passion for being a mentor is also compassion. I really love to work with students on a kind of one-to-one situation. I think this is the most inspiring kind of intellectual change you might have. apart from also like teaching on the bachelor or master's level, but really this one-to-one is where you can like see thinking moving forward. And this is a dialogue, this is a play, this is a give and take. And I like to challenge also my students, and I always use that term of creative uncertainty. So I want to get them out of their comfort zone by producing creative uncertainty and say, hey, look at that, or think about this, or what if, so that they really change maybe perspective or look at things differently. And this uncertainty then in a later stage produces new knowledge, ideally, and new insights. And these new insights then are really something that this mentee has developed. It's part of his or her own intellectual biography. And I think that is what really drives me, is to see, as you said, also to see an intellectual biography grow. It's, we're speaking here specifically about PhD or postdoc mentoring, but this can also be true for somebody having a more administrative or a technical role. But really to see that people have qualities that they might themselves not have discovered as such. And if they do, they generally are very happy about that. And if you have happier people around, you have also better scientists.
Sounds very good, although the fact of taking someone out of comfort zone does not sound very exciting to me personally. But I know what you mean. I guess it's just small pushes in different places. It's not like, why don't you now become, I don't know, someone completely different, right? It's not this drastic, hopefully.
No.
So then, we were talking very much theoretical right now, so just wanted to ask you for some concrete examples. So are there any mentee profiles that you're especially proud of? Any kind of work that you can remember, Simone, that was really like fruitful, maybe on both sides, because we already said it's a kind of two-way street.
Well, I'm of course very pleased with the PhD students that have passed my lab and that have successfully moved on in various careers, some in academia and some in other areas. But I'm particularly also proud of younger scientists who move from the postdoc level to the group leader level, let's say, to the really making the next step in their career. Which is often a very difficult, challenging step. And we know that most postdocs will probably leave academia at some point. And then for the ones that stay, it's wonderful to see that they can make that step and that they are thriving and that they are also fulfilled with this achievement.
What about you, Andreas?
Difficult question. Of course, you're happy with every successful PhD defense at the end of the trajectory, and also projects by postdoctoral students that are successfully finished. But what I liked here since I started working at C2DH is that it gives us, or me, a greater freedom to really do experimental work. The universities I was supervising or mentoring students before in Maastricht or in Utrecht, there I never had this possibility of the environment of a C2DH with fantastic technical support and with a wonderful team to make people experiment and to take risks. And I see our academic system being less and less risk-taking. If you write a research proposal, you already have to know what the outcome is. Otherwise, you will not get the money. So it's really about very sometimes boring and or intellectually not stimulating stuff, because you know already what will be more or less the result of that research. And I think we need to take way more risks to do things that we don't know and to be open to failure. Failure for me is one of the most important aspects of learning. And if you don't fail in things, you probably haven't learned a lot. And to create an environment where this art of failure or this risk-taking is not seen as something bad, that this is something good, and you encourage people in a safe environment to do that. So that's really the key, safe environment. Then people are opening, then they feel like, oh yeah, I have to, I can go different route because my supervisor, my mentor is taking care of me. He will not send me into the desert. No, he will at one point after that phase of uncertainty say, okay, now it's time to turn around and come back to bring things together. Now you have to write and finish your thesis. Now stop going at conferences or whatever. So it's that play with, on the one side, opening up opportunities and then at one point also to guide them towards the goal. But really, experimentation is for me the key element, and that should be also rewarded or in the sense also recognized as being maybe the most important part of that trajectory. And I think here in our recognition culture in academia, this is a problem. If you take real risks, and for in my case, students are developing websites instead of writing a 400-600 page historical dissertation, or they are producing an interactive web documentary, really playing around with new forms of storytelling. For me, that's the future of history, but it's maybe not recognized as such in the very conservative disciplinary environment. But to give people that trust, say, come on, you do something new. This is the future and not the past is what I really like about my job.
I have a feeling this is a bit of an appeal for the vice rector for research, like where the research of the university should go. I don't know, Simon, if you felt the pressure here or not.
I wasn't sure if it was going to the vice rector or to the FNR, but we leave it at that.
Very diplomatic answer. So our listeners are normally very much used to the fact that we have a pub quiz question in the episode. And don't worry, there'll be always pub quiz questions. But today, I really wanted to focus a lot on the mentorship. And just to finish off, I have last question for you that is a little bit like a pub quiz question. So what was the most surprising question that you've been ever asked by a mentee? Maybe something you didn't want to answer or something that's like, why are you asking me this?
Can I have a baby?
Really? That was the question? What did you say?
Yeah, of course, you should.
Okay, yes, that must have been very surprising, I agree. Okay, Simone, would you be able to actually find something comparably interesting?
I can't find a better one.
But have you been ever asked about it? Because it when you know, we are laughing here, of course, but it is an important discussion as well in academia for women, right?
Yes. No, actually, what I have seen several times repeatedly, young women, postdocs often coming to me almost in tears and telling me they have to tell me something very important. And I imagine something dramatic. And then they tell me they are pregnant. And I say, well, fantastic. Congratulations. And then there's a whole relief. You know, then they start crying and they are relieved that this is actually accepted and allowed. So I think that's really something which I was shocked about, because I think, you know, that's a normal thing in life. And of course that it has consequences and it has an impact on your work and on this and that, of course. But first and foremost, it's a fantastic news. So, yeah, I think that's an issue that can be adapted.
So we should discuss the question of the crèche at the university, right?
It's on my agenda, yes.
Okay, good. So we have here also some exchanges here going on, and I hope that they will also be happening after this interview today. And what remains is just to thank you very much, Simone and Andreas, for coming and sharing your experience and your ideas with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
My pleasure. Yes, thank you.
And this is it for today. Don't forget to subscribe, to follow us, to read what we are writing on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and all the possible social media. We are there. But of course, first and foremost, listen to the podcast, listen to the other episodes, and let us know what you think. This was Silax, and my name is Hanna Siemaszko.